This is Crucial Tech, a podcast about technology that affects us all, but few of us understand. Presented in a format that you can consume in the time it takes to go to and from the grocery store. I'm your host, Lou Covey, and I probably know more about it than you do. And if I don't, I know someone who does. This episode of Crucial Tech is brought to you by Safety National Insurance. Safety National's cyber insurance protects large organizations against network security and privacy risks, reimbursing damages and financial loss arising from accidental or malicious incidents to computer networks, software, and data. Coverage options address various risks ranging from liability, business interruption, reputational harm, penalties, and more. Visit safetynational.com for additional details. And today we're talking about the various threats that are facing societies all around the world relating to cybersecurity. And we're coming into a new election season here in the U.S. and in the U.K., and we're faced with the exact same problem that we had in 2016 and 2020, in that we know that foreign adversaries are interfering with the election process. However, this time we know it's happening, we know where it's coming from, and we have ways of dealing with it. But do we? The question is it enough? And we're going to get into some of this with Crystal Morin, a former intelligence analyst for the U.S. Air Force and currently the cybersecurity strategist at SysDig, which is a company that provides security processes for Kubernetes packages and the internet. And Crystal kind of is a jack of all trades when it comes to not only advising SysDig about strategies, but their customers as well. I was reading through the threat assessment report that the U.S. government put out recently, and it made me very depressed. But the thing is that I also know that we are doing the exact same thing to them. So what I wanted to talk to you, Crystal, about is the ethics of doing this, the ethics of cyber warfare, and how the U.S. military and intelligence agencies can use AI safely and maybe effectively to combat some of this stuff.
Wonderful. Yeah, so let's get into it. Like you said, yes, the U.S. is doing the same things that we say our adversaries are doing, right? This is foreign and domestic. We've seen case evidence just in the last couple months that election security is not just a concern from foreign adversaries, but from folks within the United States. There was one instance just maybe a month or two ago in New Hampshire, a political consultant paid, I guess what they called a magician. I don't know what that title means, but he paid a magician to create a Biden robocall, which was which was sent out to folks in New Hampshire telling them not to vote for Biden. That's being investigated right now by the New Hampshire DOJ and their AG.
Actually, I think the statement was asking them not to vote at all.
Right. Yep. Exactly. In his opinion, he was doing it to give heed and warn people about the concerns with using AI during elections. Right. That's his stance as of right now.
As of right now. Yeah. let's ignore the fact that he got paid to actually do this. So go ahead.
Right. So, I mean, this is beyond military intelligence. AI capabilities are at all of our fingertips these days, right? Yeah. But how can we use it safely and effectively? How can we interact with it properly? Safe and effective use of AI in missions is no different than it is for the rest of us. We all want to use it to speed up processes, take some of that burden off of people for understanding code, for our military understanding our adversaries' tactics and techniques, their tools, their capabilities, their networks, right? If you can deploy some kind of AI or language model into their network without being caught. You can stand to learn a lot about how they're working, and in turn be able to strike sooner, more effectively, or be able to better defend yourself from what you see that they might be doing. So that's how I think militaries might end up using AI. And then on the other side of it too, they're going to be using it the same way the rest of us do, security vendors, day-to-day marketing campaigns, emails, things like that. I would have no doubt that the White House is probably using it to help write speeches and,
I'm afraid you might be right, but it just drives me nuts because the stuff that I see AI producing, and I'm including even the latest versions of it, are so mediocre. I mean, aggressively mediocre. And
this is coming from somebody who writes for a living, right? Both come from that world. And I agree with you. And I'll use it to a point. It's a great starting point to help, come up with initial ideas. But I would never post something as is that came from an AI generator like ChatGPT or something like that. So.
Yeah, especially there was some news this morning out of the Register.
Okay.
That a piece of malware had gotten into a particular AI package, and people were downloaded it 15,000 times in 3 months. Hugging Face CLI.
Yep. I know that.
Yeah. And that's just people just doing their daily business saying, oh, this is interesting. And it's, I'm at a loss as to figuring out what we can do about this. I mean, we started out asking what the ethics of it is. And I think based on what you said and what I've read in the threat assessment report, there are no ethics involved here.
Not quite yet. As far as ethics goes too, I mean, we're still learning for warfare specifically, right? We have the LOAC, the Law of Armed Conflict, that most nations abide by in physical combat. And that is being looked at right now, by multiple governments for how does it pertain to the laws and ethics of cyber warfare? Mm-hmm. What are your fair targets? What forces can you use that are acceptable? And what is the impact going to look like of cyber warfare when your military and civilian infrastructure is convoluted, right? There's a lot of construed crossover between networks that might get a little messy if a military network is taken down. That might impact civilian infrastructure as well. It will be defined, I think, when it happens, unfortunately, but that's how we've seen military warfare ethics fleshed out in the past, is things have to actually happen for us to realize what's okay and what's gone too far. Once we see and feel the initial impacts of cyber warfare, I think is when we'll better understand what ethics might align with safe and effective cyber warfare.
So how far away are we from developing that set of ethical guidelines? And will the countries of the world, for the most part, abide by them?
Like to think that we mostly abide by laws of kinetic warfare as it stands, as a majority. Of course, there's instances that come out during war. There's a lot that's happened in the last, 2, 3, 4 decades in the Middle East, where in the heat of the moment, combatants aren't necessarily following the guidelines as they should be, and then we see them reprimanded for that later on. Like I said, as far as if we're close to determining and understanding cyber warfare ethics, I'm not sure. That kind of lands on when are we going to see an official cyber war kick off, right? again.
Can't we say it already has kicked off?
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
So, and before we go any further, I like to define terms for some of our listeners, because we run the gamut from highly technical to non-technical altogether. What does kinetic warfare mean?
So by kinetic warfare, I'm just talking about physical warfare, hand-to-hand combat, you know, the use of firearms, tanks, airplanes.
Okay. So that's kinetic warfare as opposed to cyber warfare. And you're saying that in kinetic warfare, we have a fairly well-defined set of ethics, but we haven't got there yet with cyber warfare.
Correct. That's right. Cyber warfare, I'm meaning, you know, the cyber attacks, like you said, that we've been seeing that the U.S. has imparted on our adversaries, and that we've seen happening within the U.S. and then again across the world. So these attacks are happening. I don't think that anybody has really officially declared war on the basis of a cyber attack, right?
I'm hoping I'm right in this, but based on what I've seen over the past few years, since 2016, where we realized that Russia was actually trying to influence our election, and not just ours, but the UK and every other legitimate democracy in the world, we have gotten better at detecting this stuff. And therefore defending against it.
Absolutely. The most important part, I think, about finding, being aware, and defending against these cyber attacks, the misinformation, the social engineering, is the US, the UK's desire to share that with the general public. I'm sure there's a lot we are missing that they're not going to share, obviously, right? Yeah. But we have CISA now. They're putting out joint reports with NSA, DOJ, and they're sharing some of their findings and concerns with the general public, which I do think is helpful in helping people realize what's going on in the world right now.
Yeah. Now, I want to back up a little bit here, because you mentioned something about the domestic problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me it may not be the biggest part of the problem we're facing, but it's one that we don't necessarily realize. And it's not even not technical. Like, this morning, a judge ruled that that a Georgia Republican Party's first vice chairman, Brian K. Pritchard, violated the state election laws when he voted 9 times while serving probation for a felony check forgery sentence.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, so when we're talking about election fraud, it is happening.
Right.
But it almost seems that it's the people who are complaining about the election fraud that are actually doing it. So is there any way we can start dealing with the domestic problems on an effective basis?
Well, I'm no politician. I think we're probably not all, you know, we're good people, right? But a lot of people.
There's some question about that on my end.
Nobody's perfect. There's a lot of people that are doing things they shouldn't be doing. I honestly am not sure how to stop people from doing bad things like that. How do you find and stop him from voting 9 times? I mean, there's got to be things in place. I know, I forget what it's called, but the U.S. Election Board, they've got a website and everything, and they go through everything that they do for the security of elections, and it reads great, and you can see and understand all of that. But it comes into play with us down at the base level, right? And our poll workers and things like that, trying to keep these things honest and true.
And I think they do a pretty damn good job of it too. The issue is, you know, how How much is of the technology that we've been talking about AI, cyber warfare, and that sort of thing, how much of that is actually being employed in the process of dealing with elections? And I just don't want to talk about the U.S. I mean, the U.K. is doing or the Parliament is doing an investigation right now about actually hacking into their election system. And they've known it for a few years, and they're just starting to report it to the people because they're finally coming to understand just how deep it is. But I was on a radio station in Ireland yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, how do we stop this? Just the question we're talking about here. And part of it is, I think, is just educating the public about how bad social engineering has become, and stop falling for it.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to be doing a story about this because my wife was telling me about this. My wife has a real addiction problem. She is really into tea. We have about 40 different kinds of teas in the house. The walls are covered with teacups and teapots. And she belongs to this Facebook group that's an international group that collects tea things. They're really into it. But, and they've maintained a pretty good moderation of their site. But recently they've started noticing some weird things. And they got somebody in there that was trying to fish them for information about themselves by claiming that they're looking for a particular type of teapot. But because these ladies are so well versed in what goes into making an antique, or what makes an antique teacup, that they realize this person didn't know what they were talking about and they wouldn't respond. So this group launched their own individual investigations and then share that information with each other on the Facebook group. And it was absolutely glorious how they took these people down. And it just seems to me that we're in a place right now where it would be nice if we could trust our corporations and governments to protect us, but we've got a certain amount of personal responsibility to not be so damn gullible.
Yes, exactly. First of all, kudos to your wife and her Facebook friends.
Yeah, I am wonderful. Just, she's not that great in her own security, so I'm constantly monitoring her systems. But I was so proud of her. I said, honey, you're becoming a cyber warrior.
And we need to do exactly what you said. And that's kind of what I've been trying to preach just in these last couple months. And these are conversations that I have with my family and friends is, many years ago, you know, we were told that you can't trust everything you read on the internet, right? Yeah. Do you remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a famous quote from Abraham Lincoln. Don't trust everything you read on the internet.
Exactly. So that's exactly what's happening now. Most people, unfortunately, get their news from social media, right? Yep. TikTok videos.
67% of the U.S. population gets their news from Facebook.
Exactly.
Facebook specific. It just drives me nuts.
And it's not that hard to hack somebody's Facebook profile, so you have to be careful with that. But really, you just need to believe in yourself, get the news from trusted sources, right? Don't be listening to Joe Schmo's TikTok and his personal opinions. And again, with media, there's going to be, we all have different opinions and perspectives of the same kind of topic. So you just have to take everything with a grain of salt. If it's about elections specifically, go listen to these politicians' speeches, hear it from their mouths, and make your own assumptions of what's going on, or go and listen to your preferred media sources, whatever news outlet that might be.
That could be dangerous because some people like Newsmax.
Okay, fair. To each his own, right? But that's just where we're at right now. And I lived for a little while just recently in a very small rural town in eastern Tennessee, far away from all the cities. And this was a struggle that my husband and I recognized there. They have their particular news sources, but they also, everybody still has a cell phone. So they still have access to everything at their fingertips.
Yeah.
And when you're not living in the DC metro or San Francisco or something like that, where you're surrounded by all of this information all the time, it's harder to differentiate fact from fiction.
That's a very good point.
So again, everybody across the country, it doesn't matter where they live. I would be confident in saying that everybody has access to information at this point, right? Mm-hmm. You just need to be careful where you get your information from, and you need to come to determinations and assumptions on your own accord. You can't rely on everybody else anymore. You can't believe everything that you read on the internet or on your cell phone. That's what leads to the divisiveness that we're seeing in the country that's coming again from, like we said, the domestic and foreign adversaries, if that's what you want to call them. And it's inciting violence at those small local levels and in the larger cities as well.
Okay, I think we're going to leave it there, because that's at least a positive note to end on. And I try to do that every once in a while. So, Crystal, thank you for your time. Thanks to your crew for setting this up. And I hope I'll be able to talk to you again soon when I got more specific questions.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lou. This was fun. You take care today.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's it for this week on Crucial Tech. Some thoughts on this is, like the ladies of the Royal Winton Collection Facebook group, we need to take responsibility for ourselves. We need to look at everything. There's this phrase in security called zero trust, which means you essentially don't trust anything that comes in until it's been verified. And that's even something that former President Ronald Reagan said when we were talking about nuclear weapons with Russia, that we were going to get rid of them, or we were going to trust them, but we're also going to verify. And that's what we have to do as we're going into this next season of elections in the United States. And not just that, but how we live our lives, like the teacup ladies, and how they're out there knowing what it is they're looking for and knowing when something is false. We've got to get over that naivete. So that's it for this week. Remember, we've got subscriptions available now for Cyber Protection Magazine, where the article about these ladies will be this coming week. It's not much. It's $24.99 a year, and it helps us to run this place and pay the bills. And so that's it. This has been Lou Covey with Crucial Tech, a Foot Washing Media production.